Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Progressive News Network. I'm your host and news director, Rudy. I want to thank you all for joining us tonight and tell you we have a very, very exciting show tonight. We've got Pam Goodman, first vice president of the League of Women Voters of Florida and redistricting. We've also got Meredith Uckman, vice president of NOW of Florida, the president of the Palm Beach County NOW chapter, and also some really fine women in what we're calling our round robinette. We've got Ann Vanek Desovich of the ACLU, Katie Fresh of Oceana, and Beverly Whipple of Military Family Speak Out. This is an incredible evening, what we're calling the Salute to Progressive Women. And I just want to let you know that tonight I'm dedicating this show to Dr. Elizabeth Warren, that outstanding, outstanding woman who brought us such leadership with her idea to imagine that protect consumers. Our Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is just an incredible step in the right direction, and one of the remarkably few wonderful steps taken by the administration. And we have to thank her. There'll be more about that a little later. But without any further ado, I want to welcome Ms. Pam Goodman, first vice president of the League of Women Voters of Florida. Welcome, Pam.
Thank you, Richard. It's a pleasure.
You know, you do work. The League of Women Voters is one of the outstanding political organizations that we have. If I could ask you, before I get you to talk about the League of Women Voters, could I get you just to share a little bit about yourself? What brought you to what I might call an activist stance? Since you're concerned about apathy, and I think it's important for people who do take on leadership, who do address themselves with their life to these challenges we face. Could you just tell us a bit about how you came to be an activist?
Thank you, Richard. That's such an interesting and nice question, and I'm more than pleased to. Actually, my background in the business world was in corporate business. I hope that's not a bad word to say, but
no, not at all.
I came up through the retail corporation, the Limited. Had a wonderful, wonderful, vast career of domestic and international business, and was the president CEO of their largest division, Express, the women's clothing division, $1.5 billion division. When I left the corporate world in 1999 and moved to Florida with my new husband. And at that point in time, I was lucky enough to be able to kind of shoot my arrows at a lot of different volunteer opportunities. And actually, it was in 1999 that I first volunteered for one of the political parties. And then, of course, we all know what happened in 2000 with the 2000 elections. Up to that point in time, I had no interest or background in government or politics. But that crisis in the state of Florida really drove me to say, wow, here's a huge problem. And I wanted to find a nonpartisan organization that worked not on candidates and on parties, but really on the process, and on making the process right with integrity and credibility in the whole election process. And that's how I found the League of Women Voters. We are a nonpartisan organization. They've been around for 70 years. But Florida is one of the largest state leagues, and we have over 30 leagues comprised in the state of Florida. We're nonpartisan. We don't endorse political parties. We do not endorse candidates, but we're all about citizen engagement and, most importantly, citizen education in both the candidates, parties, and the issues. We do take positions on issues after vast study and education of ourselves and the public, and then we do advocate on those issues. And there's two issues tonight that I do want to talk about that not only affect Florida, but are of national concern as well. And we can get into that in a second. But I hope that answers your question, and I encourage everyone to find what really they have a passion for. And don't ever say, I don't have background, I don't know anything about it. If you have a passion for it, you'll be able to learn it, and you'll be able to get into it, and you can make a difference. One person can make a difference.
You're absolutely right. If I could ask you one more personal question, were either of your parents engaged in the civic life?
Not at all. Not at all. I really, they voted. I was brought up in the Midwest. I was brought up to be very patriotic, and we flew our flag. But no, I when I say seriously, no background. This came to me in midlife. I was not an activist as a young woman, but I was patriotic, and it was always very important to me about the election process and the integrity and the responsibility and right that we as Americans have with the election process.
Well, when you took a look at that election in Florida in 2000, and you saw that there was a serious need to help the process, boy, you made a masterful understatement. You have some important messages for us. Obviously, one of those is going to be what the legislature has been up to. But why don't you go ahead, tell us the important message you need to tell us from the League of Women Voters.
Well, there's two issues, and since you mentioned the 2000 elections, let me start with the first issue, which is about the 2012 elections. And the two issues that I want to talk about are election reform, which is a bill that the legislature passed this last session. I know you had Susan Bucher, our outstanding and excellent Palm Beach County Supervisor of Elections, on previously, and she was talking about this election reform bill. That is the title of the bill. Quite frankly, what it is election regression and voter suppression. And when I say regression, it's because there's things in this new law, it did pass the legislature, that takes us so far back to before the year 2000 and $30 million and a multitude of people's efforts to improve our election process that the law itself is really, really just a crime. Susan spoke a lot about the specifics in it, but the biggest point of misinformation is that the average citizen, the voter, doesn't know what happened this last legislative session and how they're going to be impacted when they go to the polls next November until they actually get there. And a lot of the things in the law, in fact, first and foremost, where normally if you go to the polls since 2000 and you've moved, and we are a very transitional kind of state, people do move a lot. If you've moved from one county to another and you go into the polls on election day, you're able to that day change your address. You also can change your name. So if you've got married since the last election and you now have a new last name, you're able to change your name. Under this new law, both of those will not be allowed at the polls that day for you to cast a regular ballot. You'll have to vote what is called a provisional ballot, and oftentimes provisional ballots are the last to be counted. Oftentimes they are not counted, and the responsibility falls on the voter to actually go to the Supervisor of Elections office within 2 days of the election to prove with appropriate identification that they are who they said they were at the election. The problem with this is who it impacts. It impacts women because of the name change. It impacts youth because our youth are very transitional and move from county to county as they're attending schools throughout the state of Florida. And unfortunately, it really does impact our lower income voters who so often can't make it to the polls, or when they do get to the polls, don't have their appropriate identification. So it's really people that we've tried so much to help make voting easier in the last 10 years that are severely impacted. Secondly, it puts severe restrictions on voter groups like my own, like the League of Women Voters, but like the Boy Scouts, the NAACP, other organizations that do voter registration, that get people ready to vote. Up to this point in time, and we've done voter registration once again for the last 70 years in the state of Florida and all throughout the country, up to this point in time, we've registered people, we turn the registrations in, we do it pretty much, wherever we can, quite even-handedly. But with this law, one of the restrictions that came down was an unbelievable financial obligation on our part if certain restrictions were not met, and a time requirement. They used to allow us 3 days, which was a reasonable amount of time to get voter registration forms turned in. They've shortened that now to 48 hours. So it may not sound like an undue burden, but for thousands of volunteer members, which all of these organizations that register people are, it is a great undue burden. And because of that, for the first time in the League of Women Voters history in Florida, we have ceased doing voter registration and exploring all options, including legal options, to fight this, as I said, really voter suppression bill. And these kinds of laws that passed in Florida this last session are happening all throughout the country, Richard. It's not just a Florida. There is an
it
immense
seems
amount.
It seems like this, like, I was
I'm
just going to say,
go
it
ahead.
Seems like this, like a lot of other things, are not a coincidence that's going on across the country.
No, it's definitely a movement, and unfortunately or fortunately, all eyes are on Florida because not only of this grave law that passed and the lawsuits that are now being lined up to fight it, the ACLU has filed their first lawsuit, but the second subject that I wanted to talk about tonight, which is redistricting or reapportionment, which is also going on all across the country. Every single state, every 10 years, has to do redistricting reapportionment. And this is 2012 is the year that it must be completed in. Why is Florida different and what's going on here? Well, probably most of your listeners recall voting last November on two amendments that were on our ballot, Amendments 5 and
5 and 6.
Fair district amendments, right. And most people think that was it. It passed by 63%, an overwhelming majority, 3.1 million voters in Florida. And everyone thought, that's great. We put an end to gerrymandering, and we will now have really fairly apportioned districts in the state. But that is not the case. That was only about Chapter 5 and what is going to be a saga that really won't end until a year from now.
You know, I think that League of Women Voters, because of the really wonderful work that you have done in the trenches for so many years as a nonpartisan voter registration organization, I have to think that you must feel especially targeted.
We do, but, you know, that's the price that you pay sometimes with having a voice. And some people have the preconceived notion that the League of Women Voters is just an organization that does voter registration and conducts candidate forums and debates, and that is a very important part of what we do in educating the public. But as I said, we also take positions on issues, and our voice on these two subjects particularly, election reform, fair elections with integrity, and allowing, making it easier, making it more accessible for every single citizen in the state of Florida to vote is what we are very, very strong in our voice. And secondly, redistricting. We've been working on that since we started 70 years ago in the state of Florida, and finally we got these amendments passed this last year. It is of grave importance. It's not a very sexy subject, but if voters and citizens really understand clearly what is at stake, and there is a lot at stake. It's who represents you in government. We have a representational government. And because of our pickup in population the last 10 years, we now have two additional congressional seats than what we had 10 years ago. So there is a lot at stake in redistricting. And unfortunately, we have a legislature that is and a governor that is controlled by one political party, and they have fought fair districts from day one. So what is happening right now are hearings are going on around the state, 26 hearings held by the redistricting committee made up of Senate and House representatives. We're halfway through the hearings. Anyone can testify at these hearings. The League has been at every single hearing and has testified our concerns. But what are the concerns? Redistricting needs to be done in 2012, but this legislature is using delay tactics after delay tactics. The longer they can put off actually getting the maps finalized, the less time there will be for what will most assuredly be litigation. There's litigation on redistricting every single year that it's done. So, of course, they want less time at the end rather than more time to allow for that. So we need to get the timeline moved up. We want them to meet in their committees, get these maps done, get public input on them, and put them on the floor the second week of session in January. They could be doing that now, Richard, in these public hearings. It would make sense for them to be presenting maps to us and gaining public input and making them very productive public hearings. But they're coming to us with all of these hearings with no maps presented to us, asking us to do the work and asking for input from us. So it's very difficult to give input on something when you don't have something to give input on. So that's our second point. We need to see some maps to make these hearings more productive. And thirdly, and probably the most egregious, is the fact that there has been a lawsuit that was started right after Fair Districts passed by Congresswoman Kareem Brown and Marie Diaz-Balart from the Congress. House representatives joined that lawsuit, and this is basically to strike down Amendment 6, saying that it is unconstitutional in its minority representation clause. The bizarre thing about this lawsuit is that not only has the House joined it to get Amendment 6 struck down as unconstitutional, but because it's already in the Constitution, our taxpayer dollars have to support in defending this Amendment 6. So we are spending taxpayer dollars to fight this amendment and taxpayer dollars to defend this amendment, if that makes any sense at all, which it doesn't. That is probably the most.
It sounds like Tallahassee.
It is Tallahassee at its worst, Richard.
I understand. Besides, you know, their plan, which is incumbent protection start to finish, I understand the governor put the two people in charge who had been in charge of fighting it are ostensibly in charge of, quote, implementing redistricting. And
that's
since
right.
Florida, and since Florida elections have been so poorly managed or so mismanaged that they have to take any changes in Florida election rules for a couple of particular counties have to get federal approval. I understand they're trying to do some kind of judicial dodge. Can you address that?
Thank you, yes. And if the listeners, because I know we don't have a lot of time to get into it tonight, but it was on the front page of the Palm Beach Post in yesterday, front page right-hand column. Anything that affects election laws in the state of Florida has to be cleared by the Department of Justice, and that falls under the rules of the Voting Rights Act that was passed many years ago. We have five counties that have a large minority representation in them, and because of those five counties, we fall under that portion of the Voting Rights Act that demands this clearance. So this election law, was submitted to the DOJ for clearance. Coincidentally, just 2 weeks ago, the League issued a letter to the Department of Justice asking them to not clear this law and pointing out very specifically with our legal team from the Brennan Center why not. And just Friday night about 5 o'clock, Kurt Branning, our Secretary of State, who is the overseer of elections in the state, pulled that request for clearance from the Department of Justice and has now filed it in federal court. So basically he's impugning our current administration. His reasoning was he wanted to make sure that the state and that this law got fair hearing without any misrepresentation or misinformation. Is a very good word.
Right. While they're opposing fair districting, they're complaining that they might not get fair treatment. The ironies are thick and fast. Let me ask you before we conclude with your section, could you point our listeners to where they go to participate to help League of Women Voters, the wonderful work you're doing?
Yes, thanks, Richard, because everyone really can help. www.thefloridavoter.org is our website, and you can educate yourselves much more than I've been able to do, you know, right now, although I thank you very much for the time, but you can get into really meaty substance on our website. I encourage everyone, once you really become aware of what is going on both of these issues, the election regression, as I call it, voter suppression, and the redistricting issues, write your letters to the editor, get on blogs. Our press is our friend on both of these issues, and one person really can make a difference. So I thank you for this kind of voice and this kind of forum, and I encourage people to take advantage of it and just don't sit back and say, I can't do anything about it. You can. You absolutely can. I know people are frustrated, especially today, feeling, you know, we're out of control, and the people that sit in Tallahassee or sit in Washington are the ones. They're representatives of us. We hired them to do a job for us. Let's tell them what to do.
That's right. It is we the people, isn't it? And thank you.
Exactly.
Thank you so much, Ms. Goodwin. I really appreciate the wonderful work that you're doing, and we'd love to have you on again as a guest, okay?
Great. Thanks very much.
Okay. You have a good evening.
You
bye-bye.
Too. Bye-bye.
That's right, friends. It's a better world coming. All you've got to do again. It is one government, our government, of the people and by the people. Our second guest will be on in just a few minutes. I mentioned some important information that came to us from Representative Conyers, who's fighting the good fight over our jobs crisis, miscalled debt crisis. He lists top 10 debt crisis quotes. Number one, Bonnier bill is the depth of hell, and the Reed bill is one of the outer rings of hell, he said. This is from Jerry Nadler. Number two, this is a disgraceful moment, Mr. Dreyer. This is a disgraceful moment. Mr. Dreyer, that pernicious nonsense. That's from Representative Sandy Levin on the House floor Saturday. And we'll just one more, and then we'll go to our next guest. We can't possibly know what we're doing. This is an unidentified Democrat on how the process makes sense to know what exactly is in the legislation. And finally, Representative Glenn Moore said, we've been had. And let me go on now to our next guest. One second. Good evening. Do I have Ms. Ackman?
Yes.
Good evening, Ms. Ackman. How are you tonight?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Very good. Very good. We want to welcome you, Vice President of Now Florida and President of the Palm Beach County Now.
Yes,
Ms. Ackman, one of the things I want to ask you is, you know, I think it's so important that people who, you know, feel that there's nothing they can do. I would like to ask you if you would just tell us a little bit how you became an activist, how you got took part of this civic battle for yourself.
My 25th sister was born with a deformity, and I'm the granddaughter of a Holocaust survivor. And with that kind of a background, it seemed like it would naturally bring me to working with people who couldn't necessarily, or working for people who couldn't necessarily speak for themselves.
So that's wonderful. How did you begin, may I ask?
Well, I started in middle school and high school working with my Temple youth organizations. I worked for the Jewish Community Center in South Beach and for the Gay and Lesbian Community Center as I got older in West Palm Beach, Compass. I've worked with all different organizations, and being involved with the Temple organizations really started my activist career.
Well, that's wonderful. So you started young. That's great.
Oh, yeah.
So tell us a little about your work with Florida Now and Palm Beach Now, if you would.
Well, we've had a really, you know, rather than going into a lot of detail about background, because we have a huge background and an organization that's been around forever, we have over 550,000 members across the country. Our priority issues focus on reproductive health for women, on economic justice for women, ending sex discrimination, on lesbian rights, promoting diversity and ending racism, stopping violence against women, and ultimately moving the next generation forward so that covert discrimination against women is eradicated.
Oh, that's a full plate. Go ahead.
Yes, absolutely.
Go ahead.
With that having been said, we've been extremely busy, especially the last few weeks after my taking the vice presidency of Florida. Now, after I was voted in, we started, I got Right to Work, and so on a national level, we had a national conference in Tampa, which was incredible, where we put together several different resolutions. If you go on www.now.org, there's a tab on there that you can look at each of the resolutions, and it deals with everything from economic justice issues to women with disabilities to women of color. Pretty much anything that within our priority issues was covered within the resolutions, including Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security support. We've had in Orlando very recently in the past week, we had Operation Save America came down and the clinics in Orlando were under siege, and now went right to work to support the Planned Parenthood clinics and the non-Planned Parenthood clinics that support reproductive rights. And we were extremely successful in making sure that there were no incidents at any of the clinics, to my knowledge.
Oh, so, that's great.
We were really concerned about that. And right now, actually starting today, Dr. Carhart. I don't know if you're familiar with Dr. Carhart, but he's the doctor that took over the responsibilities that Dr. Tiller was doing when Dr. Tiller was gunned down in his church by an anti-choice zealot. Dr. Carhart in Maryland is now under siege as well by the same groups of people that took out Dr. Tiller. So right now we are demonstrating support there was a demonstration today, and throughout this week there's going to be anti-choice zealots that are targeting Dr. Carhart in Maryland as well, and we're supporting him by escorting as well. So that's what we're doing on a national level. Yes, sir?
Well, unfortunately, there's some challenges facing us now. If there's some critical issues you want to bring up to our audience, please feel free.
Okay. Well, actually, on a statewide level, we are getting organized around this next session. So anybody who's interested in contacting us in order to find out more about how we're handling any of the priority issues, or anyone who's interested in getting involved, can simply go to our website, which is pvcnow.org, and we can start with on the local level and work our way up state and national as well. Let's see. This past weekend, I went to this wonderful statewide progressive platform networking event in Orlando, where the progressive groups are actually putting together a platform so that we can help each other and make sure that all of our issues are focused on. And the Women's Caucus agreed that the three primary things that we need to be focused on are health care, domestic violence, and economic justice. So we've done everything on a local level, from demonstrating in front of Alan West's office concerning the Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security issue, to focusing on, for example, yesterday we had a flash mob in City Place. We partnered with a group of basically teenagers who wanted to demonstrate support for the LGBT community and for equal marriage. And so we participated in that flash mob, and it was really amazing. We had a lot of fun. It was just a really cool event. So
it's so nice when we see young people coming out and joining some of us who've been in the trenches for a while.
Well, it was really fantastic because they really organized it. We just participated. So it was really great that they took the initiative and really ran the whole thing. They did such a really great job, and it really had an effect, I believe.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So right now you're getting ready. It seems you can almost imagine that with the kind of law and kind of bills that came out of Tallahassee last year, that these people are even going to try to press harder. I mean, how do you upstage 18 anti-choice votes, you know?
Well, you know, we managed to make enough friends so that all 18 Anti Choice Amendments did not go through. We had there were five that went through, and that was bad, but it could have been worse. And we're just going to have to continue working with our friends and, you know, making sure that our lobbying efforts are, you know, don't fall on deaf ears, and really getting the community involved in letting our legislators know that we're not, that it's not okay to, you know, to treat women like second-class citizens.
Well, you know, that reminds me, I've heard a rumor that there's a line item for a rape crisis and treatment center. Can you address that?
Our budget, we had a, I've been on the steering committee for a rape crisis and treatment center in Palm Beach County for the last several months. We've been working on it, and it looks like we've got the budget for it. So, believe it or not, there are some things that take precedence over the atrocities that are befalling women in this economy these days. And we are going to have a rape crisis and treatment center in Palm Beach County. And the reason and it was really important to do that because in Palm Beach County we've had some of the resources, but we haven't actually, because they weren't all under the same roof, we haven't had experts taking rape kits. We haven't had certain support for women that we really needed to have, and we didn't have, and particularly having to do with the rape kits, if we don't have a same nurse, which is a specialized nurse examiner, take the rape kits, and there are pieces of evidence that are not included, and it means that in a court case, some of the cases fail. So we're more likely to get to be able to prosecute later if we can get a proper rape kit done. And more importantly, emotionally, having this place where people can, where women can go, men too actually, where people can go to find that solace and to have somebody who's experienced enough to be able to counsel them, it's going to make a big difference.
Well, that's some good news on a rather bleak horizon. Thanks so much, Ms. Ackman, for bringing us some good news.
Absolutely.
When you sum up, could I ask you to once again to mention the website people can go to get information to get involved?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Our local website is pbcnow.org. The statewide website is flnow.org, and the national website is now.org.
And thank you so much.
Our next meeting for Palm Beach County Now is going to be on August 15th at Compass GLCC, and that's at 201 North 6th in Lake Worth.
Well, thank you so much for your generous time. Keep up the good work. We really support you. If there's ever anything we can do for you, please don't ever hesitate to call us, okay?
Thank you so much for your time, Rick. I appreciate it.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was Meredith Ackman, Vice President of Now Florida and President of Palm Beach County Now. We've got another guest. Let me bring her on. Once again, tonight, Progressive News supports our wonderful progressive women. So thank you so much. And who do we have here? This must be Katie. Hello, Katie. Okay, what? Let's go on. I'll bring Beverly on. I think we've got Beverly here, and Katie will join us.
Okay.
Hello, is this Beverly?
It is. Hi, Rick.
Hello, Beverly. Welcome. Welcome to Progressive News salutes progressive women of Florida. So tell us what work you're doing today.
Well, lamenting the budget crisis, of course, and the fact that because of my primary focus being on ending the wars, I'm just incredulous that there has been virtually no mention of what these wars are costing us, and not just in terms of the human cost, but in terms of what it's costing each one of us financially, our communities, our human services. and why we are not demanding that our Congress people stop it. I mean, stop the bleed. I truly don't understand that the polls show that 75% of the American people think it's time to leave. You and I know that we have permanent bases in Iraq and that we're going to be there forever. And yet people will tell you that, you know, we're going to be leaving Iraq. I never cease to be astounded that people are so satisfied with whatever they hear instead of digging just a little bit deeper. In fact, I was listening to a talk show the other night, and a woman made some just outrageous claims. And the host asked her what her source was, and she said Fox News, as if that is a legitimate source of information for anybody who's really doing their homework.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right. Unfortunately, too many people are either feel they're too busy, they can't afford the time, and unfortunately, they ignore this nonsense at their peril. And on the other side of the coin, when the president has asked people to call in, I'm sure you've heard the same stories I've heard, that servers crashed and phone logs were jammed. And yet it seems to make no difference that these people are still mesmerized by the right-wing analysis that what we have here is not a problem because the wealthiest corporations pay no tax and have been given incentives to ship jobs overseas, and that it's no problem that we can be the policeman of the world and support machinations of manipulating governments and having secret police and secret armies everywhere. That's no problem. And it's no problem to unfortunately, too many times, to avoid paying for the medical care and the needs of these returning veterans, and yet that never comes up. And it's a more in a crime. It's these people are not serving us well at all.
I think that's the appropriate word, Rick. I agree with you. I think what our government is doing and failing to do is, in fact, criminal. And just today was announced that Tony Blair is going to have to give his government some answers. You know, what a concept that that our leaders are accountable. And I'm absolutely astounded that more people aren't saying to these people in the House and the Senate, "You work for us."
Bev, let me pause for just a minute, and I'm going to bring Ann on.
Sure.
Okay, hold on one second. Okay, here we go. Hello, Ann. Welcome.
Hey, Rick. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you. I so appreciate you coming. Could I ask you, Ann, to introduce yourself, and then I'm going to have Beverly introduce herself as well. Ann, tell us a little bit yourself and what you do.
Sure. Hi. I'm Ann Vanek-Dasevich. I'm with the Florida AFL-CIO, and I am their field media coordinator. And what I do is I work with all of the folks in the field, the real people on the ground, and help them help them deliver media and pitches and events that capture the media's attention and keep the keep the ball rolling, the education going, and people talking about what we're doing.
Good. Let me add, Beverly, we started talking right off the bat. Could you please take a moment to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Beverly Whipple, and I have been active in the movement to stop the wars, actually since before they began. I'm the Florida coordinator for Military Families Speak Out, which is a national organization of families who have family members who either have or are serving in either Afghanistan or Iraq and who oppose the war. And we're a formidable organization, understanding that more families would join if they weren't afraid for the repercussions that it might have on their soldiers.
Yeah, before we go too much further, I would like you both to address, and if you would do this first, tell me a little bit about one of the things that I'm always intrigued by, so many of us who are active, who do try to put our shoulder to the wheel, you know, we worry about the apathetic, the people who are disinterested and disengaged. Could you take a minute, Anne, to do what made you get up out of the chair and put your shoulder to the wheel? Same question of Beverly.
Sure, absolutely. I think, you know, I started in college. I think many of us do, and I worked for women's rights in college. And then, you know, I started advocating on energy policy issues, so environments, communities, and people. But I'll be honest, working with politicians, you can get kind of jaded. So now I'm working with real people on the ground. And I have to tell you that it has given me a great deal of hope that people, I mean, I'm honored, actually, every single day that I get to work with them. They're so diverse. Everybody's different. And teaching them how to tell their stories is teaching me, really, I think, how to tell mine even better. So I'm honored, actually, to be doing what I'm doing right now in this point in my life.
Well, thanks so much. Beverly, could you speak to the same point? How did you get interested? How did you get involved?
Sure. I can really identify with what Anne's saying. I was interested in politics from the time I was in high school. And actually, my first real job after college was working for a United States senator on Capitol Hill, who happened to be the first and for a long time the only senator who introduced legislation to force the Senate to stop funding the Vietnam War. It would be many years before that actually happened. I've had a number of my friends ask me, why do I still do this? Why, you know, I've beaten my head against a brick wall for what's now looking like 45 years. And I often ask myself the same question. But the bottom line is I couldn't sleep if I didn't. Are we making a difference? I don't know. I hope so. They're tiny baby steps. Sometimes we take, I think it's kind of work where it's two steps forward and one step back, and sometimes just the opposite of that. But the fact is that there is something about people who are willing, as you said, to stand up and get off the couch that is just in our makeup. It's we can't sit and watch. I'm not only conflicted about why people, I mean, confounded by why people are seemingly unwilling to get involved in anything beyond their little spheres, but it's also disturbing that people are not willing to research their candidates, to go to public events where they can talk to these people, and this feeling of we've almost created a monarchy in Washington so that these people sometimes will deign to meet with us, sometimes will deign to actually speak to us, when, as I said before, they work for us. And I'm really confused by why so many Americans feel so unempowered. That is very disturbing for me.
Well, thanks so much. Thanks so much, both of you. Anne, could you address, our unions here have really done some remarkable things. I was so impressed at that event that was held in Orlando, bringing so many people together to see how there was such great cross-fertilization between a variety of progressive voices, progressive communities, and so many different branches of the union. What's coming up? What's ahead for us, Anne? Could you speak to that?
Absolutely. Stay tuned, because we are going to be continuing with the working family movement, working families in Florida. And I have to echo what Beverly just said, too, is how do you get people off the couch? How do you know, I am sometimes as well just totally overwhelmed by how is it possible that you can sit there day after day criticizing what's going on and not do anything about it. Well, I think people are starting to stop doing that so much, and I'm really hopeful that they are, because I've seen that, like, as you were at that event, as I was, and there were over 5,000 activists there. I mean, that's incredible. We put the whole thing together in less than 3.5 weeks. So to, you know, get 5,000 people up and off the couches in 3.5 weeks is a huge movement in Florida. We are actually have a website, which is www.fightforflorida.com. It is the hub of all these different organizations, different communities coming together, united for sometimes for the first time. So many organizations are so used to being on their own and fighting for their own turf, and now that's no longer an issue anymore. We are working cooperatively to move our own agenda forward, and that agenda is about the rights of working families.
Well, that's great. We will be looking forward to that news. Beverly, how about you? What's coming up on the peace front?
Well, in October, there's going to be what we are hoping will be a truly meaningful gathering in Washington, D.C., to confront both Congress and the President about these ongoing wars. As Ann pointed out, I mean, Florida can put together some truly amazing things. I think we are kind of scrambling. I think the Democratic Party in Florida has really been very confusing for most of us. And
you're very generous. You're very generous,
yeah,
Beverly.
Well, I mean, the party virtually said, "Don't talk about the wars," and I don't get it. I don't get it, and I think it's to our detriment. I think it's been a huge personal disappointment. I know many lifelong Democrats who are just thoroughly disgusted that we can sit and watch our party just do business as usual on so many levels. But this rally, and it's not really a rally, I think this time we're going with the idea that hopefully there will be hundreds of thousands of us, and hopefully there will be many thousands of us who are willing to stay until something changes. I believe that's what it's going to take. I think weekend jaunts to the mall are invigorating and encouraging, but they don't accomplish anything. And I think we've got to be such an annoying presence that my theory is camp on your congressman's door, and every day when they open the doors, go in and say, "I'd like to meet with the congressman or congresswoman," until it happens, and have the press with you. Because until these people are called out, they will absolutely run from us as fast as they can. So I'm hoping that this event in October, which is a gathering of virtually all of the anti-war groups, labor groups, women's rights groups. We are, it is a combined effort at last where we are truly saying we are here until you respond to us.
I'm going to ask you both to listen to a quote that I want to read you. This is from Representative Conyers. He says, this is regarding the phony debt crisis that we're facing in Washington, they're so mesmerized by. He says, "We've got to educate the American people at the same time we educate the President of the United States. The Republicans, Speaker Boehner, or Senate Majority Leader Cantor did not call for Social Security cuts in the budget deal. The President of the United States called for that." This is what Conyers said. And he said, "My response to him was, we will have massive thousands of people in front of the White House if that's what you do." Do you have any reaction to that? I realize it might be difficult for you to speak on the issue, but what's your reaction to a message like that, that it was the President who's insisting on the Social Security cuts?
The President, this is Beverly, and I will say that the President has most definitely not been our hero. I am absolutely heartbroken, truly heartbroken, that there is such an absence of leadership and courageous leadership. He is the President of the United States, and he acts as if the Tea Party and what they want is far more important than even his own, what I believed were his own personal values. And that's just not okay. And I, from from Conyers' mouth to God's ears, I hope people finally get it, that if they want to maintain anything, like if we want to get this country back to work, if we want to end these wars, if we want to tend to the needs of our people, then we're going to have to be in the streets demanding it. And I hope that's true. Because they're not going to change voluntarily.
Thank you.
I agree with Beverly. I think that, you know, we've got to take it to the streets. And I think the families are finally figuring it out. I think that leadership is key. I think that we are blessed at the Florida AFL-CIO to have President Mike Williams, who is just a unbelievably talented leader, pulling together all these different communities and having a voice in what's happening. And I think Beverly's right. We take it to the streets. We take it to their front doors. We take it into their offices, and we demand to be heard. And that's, I think, why we have been successful in the past, is that these, you know, working families have come together and said, you know what, the job you're doing just isn't really good enough. It's not working for me anymore. And we need to do something different.
Well, ladies, you know, I have to tell you that from the bottom of my heart, when I hear the kind of voices and the kind of thoughts and the energy that you bring, it always renews my faith. One of the reasons that this show exists, Progressive News exists, is because the best news out there is the fine work the progressives are doing every day. And I take my hat off to you, and I wish you a long and very happy career, because we need your spirit. We need your spirit very much in this state, and I just can't thank you enough. Do you want to each take a moment and leave us with some final thoughts from your perspective on the challenges we face today? Beverly, let me ask you first.
Yeah, I'd like to leave one thought, Rick, and that you wish us a long and successful career. I would like, as a grandmother, as someone nearing 70 years old, I would like not to have to do this anymore. I would like for the people to be informed, aware, active, involved in their own futures, so that there is no need for people like me and Anne and Meredith and Pam to continually be challenging, the monster. But I hope that everybody will look up the October 8th event in Washington. All are welcome. Come and join us.
Thanks. Thanks so much, Beverly. I really appreciate it. Anne, your thoughts?
Well, it's really hard to follow Beverly up, honestly, because I think she said everything that I would have said. And that's, you know, we'd like to work ourselves out of a job, basically. And I would encourage everyone out there, if they have time, to go to www.fightforflorida.com. And we are working very hard on the redistricting events going on around Florida right now, and that's one of the ways we can get out and get ourselves heard. And I am just totally pleased to have been included, Rick, on your program of Progressive Women. I feel like I'm, you know, these women were really, really unbelievable, and thanks for having me on.
Well, ladies, thank you both for joining me. The strength, the character, the energy that you bring, it is really, it's an honor to have you as guests, and anytime you have a message you'd like to share with us, don't ever hesitate. Thank you both so much for joining me.
Thank you, Rick, for what
Thanks,
you
Rick.
Do.
Okay. Good evening, ladies.
Bye, Rick.
Good evening.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Beverly.
There's a better world if you come in and tell you why. There's a better world if you come in and tell you why. We will beat them on the land.
That's right, friends. There's a better world a coming. Progressive News Network is brought to you with the support of Media Goddess Worldwide, and Imagineering Productions. I want to thank my co-producer, another fine progressive woman, Mickey Royce. I want to thank my lovely wife of so many happy years, Linda Spizak, for all her support. I want to thank my two daughters, two fine, fine progressive women, for all the work that they do to make this a better world. But on a sobering note, I do want to read you some other interesting news. There's a new attack on your privacy, misnamed as is so often the case. It's called the Protecting Children from Internet Pornographers Act of 2011. Internet providers will be forced to keep logs of consumer activities for 1 year in case police want to review them in the future under legislation that the U.S. House of Representatives Committee approved today. 19-10 vote represents a victory for conservative Republicans who made data retention their first major technology initiative after last fall's election. The Justice Department officials who've quietly lobbied for the sweeping new requirements, a development first reported by CNET. A last-minute rewrite of the bill expands information that commercial internet providers are required to store, including customer names, addresses, phone numbers, credit card numbers, bank account numbers, temporarily assigned IP numbers. By a 7-16 vote, the panel rejected an amendment that would have clarified that only IP addresses must be stored, but that was walked back. It represents a data bank on every digital act by every American that would let us find out where every single American has visited a website, says Zoe Lofgren of California, who led Democratic opposition. Lofgren said the data retention requirements are easily avoided because they only apply to commercial providers. Criminals would simply go to libraries or Starbucks coffee houses and use the web anonymously, while law-abiding Americans would have their activities all recorded. And also, now as you may remember, I dedicated this show to Elizabeth Warren, visionary who conceived the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Unfortunately, while many of us were sold a bill of goods that, her assistant, Richard Caudray, former Attorney General of Ohio, was going to be the first director. However, it seems that behind the scenes, Raj Date, or Date, who served as the agency's associate director of research, markets, and regulation, will become the special advisor to Geithner, and he, not Caudray, until he's confirmed, will run the bureau's daily operations until a director is confirmed. Now, Date, or Date, has an interesting background. You can see what a consumer activist he must have been. Date may be the acting director for a while, this report says. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau formally opened for business Thursday, but 44 Senate Republicans have promised to block Cordray's confirmation unless the White House agrees to major changes, read gutting, the Bureau that would weaken its power. The House approved those changes last week, including replacing the single director with a five-member bipartisan commission, but the White House strongly opposes that. Date was considered a contender for the director nomination. He has more than a decade of experience. His experience is in financial services, including serving as a managing director at Deutsche Bank. In 2009, he founded the Cambridge Winter Center, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that works to educate policymakers on financial regulation. So you can see how qualified he is. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Progressive News Network. I'm your news director, Richard Spizak, saying solidarity, my friends, solidarity. There's a better world to come.
And we'll all be
there's a better world coming. Oh, no, no, there's a better world.
Good night, and we'll see you next week.
I'm a union man in the union war. It's the union world I'm fighting for. There's a better world that's coming, don't you know? There's a better world that's coming. There's a better world that's coming. There's a better world that's coming.